This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, Good Together listeners. I hope you're doing well. We were so excited to hear that The Guardian, as in that major publication over in the UK, highlighted Good Together as one of their top picks for climate positive podcasts. And let me tell you, that was a pretty crazy feather in our cap over here. I mean, we've been doing this for years now. And, you know, when I think about the way that we talk about oftentimes confusing or scary topics as it relates to sustainability, I always have to remember that we bring everything home and talk about it from the angle of a conscious consumer, because that's what we do every day. We consume things. The goal of this podcast is to help you consume better and to not feel guilty or judged if you can't consume better 100% of the time, because none of us can. When I got that notification, I think somebody tagged me on LinkedIn. Strangely enough, I didn't get another notification about it, but was really, really excited. So thank you so much, listeners, for your continued support of this podcast. I think, our overall users and feedback and everything that we get is just one highlight of what we do. And I'm just really thankful for you. Okay, so we've got another solo episode for you. It's the end of February, and I wanted to hop in with some news in the sustainability realm. And as always, again, we're talking about it from the angle of conscious consumers. So I've got like three themes for us today, because I thought, you know, there were like three major articles that I found or that stuck out to me. It does not mean that I didn't miss something, because I'm sure I did. but let's first start off by talking about what I thought was really cool, which is Thrive Market. So if you're not familiar with Thrive Market, they are a subscription-based grocery delivery service. And when I say grocery, it's more like dried items and like, what do they call it? Sundries? Isn't that like a weird old person term? But yes, it's a place where you can go and get things cheaply. I love to use Thrive Market for eco-friendly like beauty products and shampoos and baby products, etc. They always have a really big savings from like your typical stores or even Amazon. But it is a subscription. And so Thrive has sponsored Good Together in the past. They're no longer an active sponsor. I don't have a subscription that's paid for by them, but I still renew it because I find that the savings are really good. But the reason why I'm talking about Thrive is because they have been approved to accept SNAP and EBT benefits. And they are, according to them, one of the first online grocers that has been able to do that. And the reason why this is so exciting and so important, and actually I think they sent a push notification, I used their app, and I think they sent a push notification when it came out, I like, you know, threw my hands up and clapped because I think this is a huge deal. We talk a lot about food deserts on this podcast, and from my perspective, it can feel really out of touch for me to be talking about various eco-friendly and sustainable items when many people don't even have access to like healthy food in their communities, especially here in the United States. So when somebody like a Thrive Market is able to allow online purchases with these benefits, they are actually expanding access to healthy, eco-friendly groceries for those who might not have, again, physical access to some of these items. Now, is this perfect? No. Obviously, Thrive Market is not, they don't have fresh food on there, which is a huge deal. But they do have a lot of, like, another thing I like about them, I promise they didn't pay me this, but I like that they have affordable generic alternatives to like organic things like organic ketchup, etc. So if you're on a budget, it might seem counterintuitive to to pay a subscription for groceries, but you make it back pretty quickly and it is pretty nice. They offset all their shipments, etc. And again, I mean, you know, from a food desert perspective, not only is it important that people themselves get access to healthy foods, it also, you know, begs the question of what is the environmental impact of excluding certain populations from healthy food? And I mean, you think about the need for more, homegrown or like locally grown options. Obviously, like conventional farming isn't great for the environment, but you know, smaller operations, of course, can be very self-sustaining and actually give back to the environment. And I think, again, from a food desert perspective, I feel like environmental sustainability and social equity are not taught, like the link between those two things is not talked about enough. And so to me, understanding the dynamics of food deserts and their impact on communities is really, I'd say, crucial for implementing effective policies that are going to be, you know, trying to improve access to sustainable food options for everybody. So way to go, Thrive Market. I think that's awesome. If you've ever had to deal with any type of government program, my husband was in the Navy for many years, you know how hard it is to get anything approved or done from a government perspective. Like, it just takes forever to interface with those people, those departments. So I'm sure this was a hard-fought victory for them. Of course, they're going to benefit financially. We can't say that. Like I said, they didn't pay me. But again, I think this is great. I want to see more available options, healthy available options for people to use these benefits. So awesome job. Okay, moving topics to something that I like can't even open my phone without hearing about because I'm in this sort of sustainable bubble, is news from a company called RenewCell. So RenewCell is a company that is dedicated to recycling textiles, and they've been doing this for years, and their primary business model was working directly with companies like H&M, like those big, you know, sort of high street companies, as they'd say overseas, to recycle textiles en masse. And they, unfortunately, just filed for bankruptcy. And the reason why this is such a big deal is, number one, in general, we're losing a great company. Like, this the company was developing technologies to really, like, transform discarded textiles into new materials for clothing. So, like, we talk so much about clothing waste and the circular economy, et cetera, but they had a process that actually would break down these used textiles into really basic components like cellulose fibers, and then they would spin and weave new fabrics out of it. And so by doing that, the company was trying to reduce the need for more virgin materials to be created and thus lessen the environmental footprint overall of textile production. Unfortunately, though, they just filed for bankruptcy, and they're not the only game in town. Of course, there's other companies doing this, but I think what really shocked the community, or like the people who care about eco-friendly fashion community, was that this is not the first time we've seen cracks on the surface of the great idea of the resale economy being profitable. So I'm talking specifically about, monetizing the circular economy as it relates to fashion and doing it in a profitable way so that we can incentivize businesses to start new types of resale companies, or incentivize, the H&Ms of the world to bring this in-house, or, just again, money talks, right? Like trying to get people to have a positive financial stake from something like this. Unfortunately, this is not the first thing that we've seen happen. I mean, ThredUp, notorious, you're probably very familiar with ThredUp. It's an online thrift store, has been around for years and years. They've probably been around for almost 10 years, if not close to that. I'm remembering because I, back in the day, interviewed for a job with them way long ago. And anyway, they are trying to turn profitable. In 2023, they were trying to turn profitable. They have yet to turn a profit. So I think we all know the economics behind these types of companies. They use a lot of venture capital and other sources of funds to keep chugging along until they get profitable. But from a consumer perspective, right? So remember, if you're not familiar with ThredUp, right? ThredUp sends you a bag of clothing. You throw it in the bag. You ship it back off to them. They will take photos and list that clothing for you on their massive marketplace. You get a few dollars back and I think store credit to shop also on ThredUp. I actually love to use it for my daughter. I have a toddler. Her clothing, I think it's a great option for that. Anyway, it's kind of hard to find stuff on there, though. Let me tell you. They haven't really solved for discovery. It can be really difficult to find things. I'm sure they are so overwhelmed with the sheer amount of stuff that they get. I cannot, that literally is my worst nightmare, is to intake all that stuff. But that part of the business where me as a consumer, will send things to them and then I will go and buy products back from them is not profitable, and it's not even close to being profitable. It's losing money for the reasons that I just mentioned, right? Lots of hands are involved and, lots of labor is involved to sell items that already can't technically be worth quote unquote a lot of money. But slightly good news there is that ThredUp is finding profitability in a separate line of business, which allows businesses to utilize their services to sell their own clothing back to each other. So Patagonia, I don't believe is a customer of theirs, but here's an example. Patagonia, if you go to their website, they have their, I forget exactly what it's called, but they have a fun name for it. I think it's Renew. Anyway, if you go to their website, they've got a section of the website where you can look at previously loved, pre-owned products and buy them directly from Patagonia. I myself have investigated a few of these different providers. I didn't actually know ThredUp was doing this. There's a lot of smaller units in town, like Treat. There's another one out there that I can't remember off the top of my head. But those businesses are actually profitable. Well, in theory, there's more money, quote unquote, to be made because they are monetizing directly from other businesses. So as long as the end business, right, the Patagonias of the world can, find people to buy clothing from them like that, we kind of solve for that discovery piece that I talked about earlier, right? Maybe I, as a consumer, get overwhelmed when I go to ThredUp's website and I get barraged with every single brand ever, and it's kind of a mess, but maybe if I'm a diehard Patagonia fan, I'd love to just go directly to Patagonia and buy that pre-loved stuff. So if we as consumers can demonstrate that we like this kind of business model, I'm all for it, right? Let's make the companies that provide those services some money so that they can keep doing it.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
yeah, anyway, I think that was, like, the main thing that really, like, upset people from this news, which was, number one, we're, like, losing an environmental, you know, sort of pioneer when it comes from a textile waste and, you know, textile circular economy, textile innovation perspective. But we're also scratching our heads and thinking about, well, pardon the French, well, shit, if we can't make the circular economy make money, then it's pretty doomed from a business model perspective. Now, listeners, you know, our Buy Nothing group, my favorite thing ever, clothing swaps that are free in your community, those type of things are always going to exist, and I love that. But if we want to see change at a larger perspective, of course it would be great to get bigger businesses and sort of like bigger systems set up. So that was a little bit of a downer. And I just keep seeing people talking about it. Like, it's just, people are using, I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, listeners, like, I don't know if I've even said this last time, but I feel like in general, it's ever since we've had the pandemic, we've just been riding these like ups and downs as society, right? Like, there's a lot of bad stuff going on in the world. I feel like, has it always been like this? I don't know, but it feels like there's a lot going on. So, you know, it's easy for people to see bad news like this, especially from like an industry perspective, and like go full pessimist with it, right? And say, oh, that means no circular economy is ever gonna, circular economy initiative is ever gonna make money. That's not true, but a lot of doom and gloom articles out there. So if you're interested, we'll include links to the show notes, but check out RenewCell. It's all one word. Just Google that. There's a ton of really good articles about it. Vogue Business did a really good one. So yeah. All right. So the last theme I have for you is very general, but I think it's worth talking about because you're probably thinking about this. And that topic is traveling. So end of February, I think spring break is coming up for people next month in March. We also have people like planning summer vacations. I myself am going to Kauai with my family here in a few weeks, which I'm very excited about. We've done countless episodes about sustainable travel and, you know, trying to do certain things as a consumer. Particularly the ones that I'm passionate about are the ones involved in uplifting local economies, right? Going to local restaurants, like not just like keeping yourself at the hotel. But one thing that was super interesting that I found was a study came out specifically talking about how hotels are starting to listen to consumers' demands for more sustainable or eco-friendly practices. And as a matter of fact, so this research was done by a hospitality management consultancy called Pace Dimensions. But it was actually a really like nice sort of bright spot in the news we were talking about, which is after they did their study and their analysis, their conclusion was, hey, hotels, you better change your practices or you're going to lose business. And that's pretty powerful. They, you know, really got into a few different, you know, aspects when we think about sustainable travel. But let me just share a few different findings that I thought were really interesting. So number one, their data saying that over 1 in 3 people will pay more to be environmentally friendly, and they're going to be actively assessing the eco credentials of their accommodation. So 30% more or less of any hotel's target market is going to be looking up what that hotel is doing to be more eco-friendly, which is huge, because we know oftentimes people say that they want to be eco-friendly or whatever, and they don't actually do that. 41% of consumers in this survey said that sustainable travel is important to them. So not as high actually as like some of these other surveys where like 100% of people say they want to be more eco-friendly. At least 41% is a little bit more realistic, but, you know, thinking about, you know, this big chunk of potential customers coming in the door to your hotel or your, you know, your restaurant, et cetera, is going to look up your eco-friendly credentials, which I think is really interesting. Obviously, this is bigger for younger age groups in terms of being the most aware of environmentally practices. But, you know, other consumer groups such as like older age groups or quote unquote luxury consumers, not necessarily meaning that those things cannot be one and the same, but luxury consumers are particularly more discerning. And they're the ones that are saying like, well, I've got a lot of money to spend on a hotel and I really want to make sure that it is the most sustainable. You actually might notice this as you're going to book travel lately. You'll start to see, pick it, like badges that hotels create for themselves or like little call outs in like Expedia, if you're on Expedia or something, like you'll start to see like, oh, this hotel does X, Y, and Z for the environment, or, you know, they've implemented these various practices. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that like one of the first things I ever noticed at hotels as it related to sustainability was there was like that little card that they would prompt you to put on your bed and say, hey, like we don't actually have to wash your sheets every day and you probably don't need us to. So if you put this card on your bed, we're not going to wash your sheets. And you know, it's funny, like that is a huge impact in terms of, you know, power use reduction, water use reduction, etc. And most hotels, when they have those little cards, will tell you exactly how much you're saving, which is pretty cool. But it's funny to me how like before they started that initiative, or you know, one hotel started it and it became like a big sort of trend, was the standard practice was your sheets got washed every day, your towels got washed every day. And I don't know about you, but most of us are not doing that at home. And please, if you are, please don't. I mean, I know I say I don't like to judge, but if you have to do it every day, could you not wait another 2 days? But I think the average person, or at least like the official recommendation, is you should change stuff out once a week. Towels, I think, a little bit more of a gray area. Depends on how often you're bathing, etc. They might actually need to switch your towels out a little bit more often, but the average person doesn't need to change your sheets, clean sheets more than once a week. So the fact that you're going on a hotel trip and you get that all done every day is a little bit silly. And not only is it silly, it's actually not good for the planet. So anyway, this one is a little bit more, not as much like hard data, I guess. I mean, I'll include links to this survey that popped up at me, but the reason why I wanted to share it with you was that, you know, again, we hear a lot of like well-meaning statistics around, you know, 100% of people say that they want to be more eco-friendly, or maybe it's like 95% or something. You know, oftentimes people say things and they don't necessarily act on them. But the thing that was particularly inspiring to me from this study, and of course, just one study, one research perspective, is that there is evidence that hotels need to act on these things. So that is going to propel more change, because as consumers, we have a voice. We choose where to spend our money. We choose what companies to pay attention to. That's another thing I'll end with, as those were sort of my three themes I wanted to chat about with you today. The last thing I'll say is, just because we talk a lot about consumption here on this podcast does not mean you have to consume a lot. As a matter of fact, we oftentimes talk about consuming less, like I just talked about in terms of washing your sheets less. But if you're not in the market, like let's say you're on like a total buying hiatus, or you know, you don't need to buy things or you don't need to consume, you can also choose to like follow a company on social media or support them in other ways rather than just purchasing things from them. So again, like your choice to consume less is a choice in and of itself that a company is going to understand from a financial impact, but your choice to support businesses in other ways is also really important. So I know that it's it sometimes seems strange we're talking about all these products or sort of like the consumption world as it is, but I just want you to know there's a variety of ways to get involved. So that's just to this month's brief news roundup. If you have articles that you find are particularly interesting, send them to our Brightly Instagram. We're at brightly.eco, as you probably know. Send us a DM, put in a comment. Like, if there's something that you find to be particularly interesting, let us know. And you know what? There's one more thing that just came to mind, which is very sad. And I'll just do a quick 30 minute, goodness, 30-second overview, the beloved owl that was hanging out in New York City, Flacco, unfortunately passed away. And I love my family and I love owls. Like owls like literally are our kindred animal. We love it so much. It's very sad to hear about Flacco's passing because he was sort of a figure in the city for a little bit. And unfortunately he died from injuries from non-bird safe glass. So again, I don't want to end on a totally sad note. I mean, it's so sad that he passed away. But you know, having these broader conversations now coming up and talking about the need for bird safe glass in the city and then just in general is huge. So while I'm very sad about poor Flacco, I want us to remember that sometimes it takes one particularly awful event to get us to think about solutions. And the amount of businesses that have stepped up on social media that say we're replacing our glass tomorrow is huge. So I'm comforted by that, although it's sad news. So yes, I know that was a kind of a random insertion into what I was talking about in closing. As always, listeners, feel free to chat us up on social media, send us an email, and thank you again for your support. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.